Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
One of the most remarkable aspects of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. You're listening to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Members of the church generally remember Emma Smith as the strong, stalwart wife of the prophet Joseph, enduring persecution, facing the loss of children, ever faithful to her husband. But she was Emma Hale long before she was Emma Smith, and here today to discuss her early years in Harmony, Pennsylvania, is our longtime friend Mark Staker. Mark, welcome back to Legacy.
Thank you for having me.
Mark has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Florida and is currently the lead curator for Church Historic Sites. Mark, perhaps you can tell us what you've been working on recently and why we're talking about Emma Hale Smith today.
I've been trying to understand Emma's childhood and the setting in Harmony, Pennsylvania. As you know, the church is interested in doing some things in Harmony, Pennsylvania to help honor and celebrate the restoration of the Aaronic priesthood and the translation of the Book of Mormon that took place there. And my work is the larger context for that, trying to understand those early events in Emma's life and in her interaction with Joseph Smith there in Harmony.
So how long have you been working on this, and what actually have you been doing?
About 7 or 8 years now I've been working on this, and I'm primarily looking for early source material that helps shed light on those early years of Joseph and Emma's interaction and to help understand that period of church history better. We've also done some archaeology out in Harmony, Pennsylvania, trying to uncover the foundations of the home where Emma was born and the home right next to it where she was spent most of her younger years before she married Joseph, and then another place where she and Joseph lived afterward, and trying to understand those settings.
Excellent. I recently heard your discussion about Emma Hale Smith growing up in Harmony, Pennsylvania, and you started out talking about Emma's conviction. Each of us, I think, is a product of our upbringing and our environment. And you talk about Emma's conviction to her belief in her husband. Just what in her early life caused or helped the development of that conviction, do you think?
Well, Emma she had a profound faith in Jesus Christ as a child. Her parents joined, her mother joined the Methodist Church in 1805. When a couple of individuals came into their little valley preaching Methodism. Her family were longtime Methodists already, but she hadn't joined with them as a young woman. And she ended up being drawn into the Methodist faith. And in addition, it looks as though some of her family were also Methodists, including a young Emma, who at 7 years old went out in the grove of trees, somewhat similar to her later husband, Joseph. She went out to pray, but she was praying on behalf of her father, who at that time was not a believer. He was described by neighbors as being a deist, so he believed in God but didn't believe in revelation, didn't believe in miracles and those kinds of things. It looks as though he may have associated with the Quaker community a little bit, which was very active in that valley. But as Emma was praying, her father, who was a hunter, was walking through the woods hunting and overheard her prayers on his behalf. And they touched him, and he became more active religiously, at least for a period of time. Emma's family was very much involved in religion, and she was interested in her relationship with Jesus Christ. And I think that that helped prepare her for her interaction later with Joseph.
Perhaps we can back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the history of the Hale family.
Emma's family moved in to a little narrow valley, and they called it at the time the Susquehanna Valley in northeastern Pennsylvania. They moved there in 1787, and her father did, and then after he returned to Vermont and married her mother, they settled permanently in 1790 in the valley. They built a very small log home, and it was striking as we looked at the foundations and uncovered this small home. I was expecting to find a large double log cabin, you know, that could accommodate 9 children comfortably, and it was much smaller than we had expected to find. But eventually they did have 9 children in this small log cabin, but they worked hard. Emma's father made a living primarily hunting animals in the forest, and they would ship the meat down to Pennsylvania, or down to Philadelphia, and sometimes down to Baltimore and other places as well, and Pennsylvania and Maryland, and ended up making a comfortable living doing that. They actually apparently built a large meat processing facility on their property where they could pack barrels full of meat of different types and ship it downriver. Emma's brothers also cut lumber in the woods near their home, and they put those on what they called arcs that would carry that lumber downriver to Philadelphia. And they made a comfortable living to the point that they ended up building a very large, comfortable home next to this small log home that they had initially settled in. And so Emma ultimately grew up with a life of money and privilege.
You mentioned a lot of shipping on the Susquehanna River there. It must have been fairly busy.
The river was a highway. Highways on roadways were difficult to come by in those early years, and it took a lot of effort and money to build. And so large rivers were used as highways, and the Susquehanna River was one of America's major highways. The family lived right on its banks. The settlers all along from Cooperstown, New York, on down to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, used that river for traffic of different types, but primarily to ship goods back and forth. And so the river was constantly busy from the time it thawed in the spring until it froze in the fall.
You mentioned you got to, I guess, dig is the right word, at the sites. What interesting finds was there that give you some indication of what was going on at that period?
Well, a lot of the artifacts confirmed the documents that we had already uncovered. We found bullets, for example, from Isaac Hale's gun, and a little lock plate from a gun confirming, you know, that he had weapons around. Found antlers from animals that he had killed that were being processed, and the antlers ended up as part of the refuse. So things that supported his profession as a hunter were in the archaeological record. We also found a lot of ceramics from Emma's mother, Elizabeth, kept house and had a lot of nice ceramics. Particularly one distinctive piece that we uncovered was part of a Jakefield pot, a teapot. And Jakefield pottery was the elite pottery of the day, particularly from an earlier generation, but was still used at that later date that they settled in the valley. This was the kind of pottery that queens had, which suggests that Elizabeth lived in comfortable circumstances to keep house. And as a matter of fact, when Joseph Smith's mother, Lucy Mack Smith, later visited the home. She described it as a mansion with every convenient appendage necessary. And so she saw that they had everything that they could want. We suspect that that probably included an iron stove rather than having to cook in a fireplace. And it may have included an outdoor drainage system for her kitchen sink. Isaac Hale built a home for another family member that included just that kind of sink drain, which today we think of those things as normal, but those were very nice for their day.
Did your findings help indicate maybe what was going on generally in the community?
In terms of the archaeology, it didn't shed a lot of light on the larger community. But we found lots of documentary sources that helped shed additional light. We've learned more about Emma's brother, David Hale, who kept a store in the valley. And as a matter of fact, Joseph Smith shopped at his store when he first arrived in the valley. And so we get a little insight into what Joseph was doing. He made leather mitts for workers to use, and he made a little bit of money doing that when he first arrived in the valley that helped him while he was trying to get started translating the Book of Mormon. He bought hay for his animals until he could get his own property to raise what he needed for those animals. Emma had some cows that she owned when they got married, and then shortly afterward, Joseph bought some oxen and a horse from Josiah Stoll that helped him work his farm, and so he needed to take care of those. We learn other things through these documents about the diet in the valley. David Hale would go up to the swamp upriver a little bit and gather cranberries, and was selling cranberries in his store and other items for the local residents of the valley. And so little details kind of add to the picture.
You mentioned in your presentation a record by Sylvia Dubois. Is that another help to know what sort of surroundings Emma grew up in?
Sylvia Dubois was a slave that lived downriver from the Hale family, and she later wrote of her experiences in that valley. And she was older than Emma, but remembered that period well, and she described the frolics, as she called them, the dances that they regularly did in the valley that she often joined in. And one that she particularly mentioned that I focused on because of the time period was a 4th of July celebration in 1804 that the whole valley participated in this event. And the reason I was interested in that was because 6 days later, Emma was born in that small log home that her parents had built. And so that puts a little context to that event, that perhaps Emma's mother had participated in this big event shortly before the birth of her daughter.
Thank you. We're visiting with historian Mark Staker today on Legacy. I'm Nathan Wright. Our topic of discussion is Emma Hale Smith and her early years in Harmony, Pennsylvania. The Hales were successful. They had quite a few ventures, as you say. As I understand it, they had a tavern for a while.
Well, actually, they didn't. That was one thing that we assumed initially because various historians had suspected that they might have a tavern because we knew that Joseph Smith and a number of other individuals had lived at the Hale residence when Joseph went down to work for Josiah Stoll looking for some Spanish silver. But as we looked at the sources and the legal records and some other information, it turns out that the tavern was about a half mile west of their home, and then there was another tavern 3 miles east of their home, but they didn't own a tavern.
Another assumption debunked.
Another assumption debunked. What we think happened was because they didn't tear down their log home, but when they built their larger frame home, they built it right next to the log home so it could work as what's called a summer kitchen or a work kitchen, where the family could do cooking in the summertime and keep the heat out of the larger home. They kept that structure for that purpose. That's probably where Joseph and Emma initially lived and began working on the translation of the Book of Mormon for the first few months from late December until mid-February of 1828, when they moved into the frame home. And that log home would have served to allow Joseph Smith, when he first came to the property, he and his associates would have lived there instead of in the frame home where the Hale family lived.
What do we know that Emma did while she was growing up as a young girl?
We know that she attended school. She has a very fine handwriting, particularly good spelling for her day, and very articulate. She has a large vocabulary. We can learn those things through the letters that she's left. There was a large female seminary about a mile west of their home where the well-to-do girls in the valley attended school. We don't have documents that tie Emma to that school, but believe that the context suggests that she attended there. Some of the other young women who attended that school were also well-to-do women in the valley. One of those women left a detailed diary that talks about the interests of the women of that period, the young women of that period. And as you can imagine, one of the primary interests was the young men of that period. And she details the courting experiences and how they dated, and often what they did was would go on long walks, and the young men would bring nuts and raisins and things for the young women to eat. They would go and listen to piano concerts in the neighborhood. A few people owned pianos, and they would go and listen to somebody play that piano. Courting also included talking to groups of people together. Often the young women would all get together as a group, and the young men would get together as a group, and they would go do things. And so it wasn't as much pairing off in activities as we might think took place. But one thing that was interesting was to learn that young men of that time period usually didn't ask the parents of the young woman for permission to marry. That was kind of old-fashioned, but more conservative people, more respectful people did that. But it wasn't something that everybody did. When Joseph and Emma were first introduced, Joseph was immediately interested in marrying Emma. Later on, Martin Harris says that Joseph said that I went down and I met my wife there. And it suggests kind of he knew interest immediately. Emma was particularly attractive. Lorenzo Saunders, neighbor of Joseph's, when he first met Emma, said she was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. And George A. Smith, the cousin of Joseph's, later was a little more expansive. He said she was the most beautiful woman in the universe, which was fairly complimentary of Emma. But she had a lot more going for her than just her beauty. She was, as I mentioned earlier, she was well-educated. She apparently sung very well. Almon Munson, who did run the tavern down the street that I mentioned, he also taught a singing school. And Emma apparently attended that school. It was very popular to publish hymns in the local newspaper, for example, and hymn writing was a popular activity in the valley, and singing was a popular effort. And Emma appears to have been very much involved in music in different ways. She also was respectable, involved in her religious community, where her uncle was the minister. And she had a lot going for her, so much, in fact, that it seems that Joseph didn't have a lot to offer. He was uneducated. Emma's brother-in-law said that when he first met him, he was green and ignorant, boy, not particularly impressive. And as a matter of fact, various accounts suggest that while Joseph was living down in Broome County at Josiah Stoll's, courting Emma, that he attended two schools. Maybe at the same time, I don't know, they could have been at different times, but this appears to be an effort on his part to try to get up to Emma's speed, to make himself more presentable to her. But it seems that the thing that he had most to offer was his character. One individual who knew him at that period of time said that he had an impeachable character, that he was well presentable, that he was somebody that Emma seems to have looked up to. As a matter of fact, she had other people. Martin Lane, for example, had a son in the Valley who later became a prominent Methodist theologian, was Emma's age, could have courted her as well. There were other people that had things to offer, but Joseph was the one that she ended up choosing to marry.
We often hear her father, Isaac, was opposed to Joseph based on his reputation as a treasure digger or whatever. What were his actual concerns about Joseph?
As I mentioned, it was customary it wasn't necessarily customary to ask for the daughter's hand, ask a father. But in this case, Joseph did ask Isaac Hale to marry Emma. He was appears to have been more conservative, trying to be respectful, trying to do that which was seen as appropriate within his community. And Isaac turned him down. And in his later affidavit, the reason he suggests or indicates that he turned him down is the first thing he says is Joseph was a stranger. And if you look at Emma's siblings, they all married somebody within the community or over the mountain, in one case a little bit further up the road. But they all married within the larger community, and they settled right around Isaac and his family, Isaac and Elizabeth on their farm. Some lived immediately next door, some a couple of farms down. A few of Emma's siblings settled right across the river, but they could all send their grandkids over, their children over to Grandma and Grandpa's house on a regular basis. Joseph was a stranger. He lived much further away. Isaac also says that he didn't approve of Joseph's profession. Doesn't say what that was. We typically assume that it probably included the treasure digging activities that he was involved with Josiah Stoll, to help find that silver treasure. But in Joseph's account, he also suggests that Isaac didn't approve of his religious experiences, that he had shared in some context his experiences with having Moroni visit him and looking to translate the Book of Mormon that he'd been commanded to do. That may also have been part of this profession that Isaac Hale mentioned. At least Joseph perceived that being the case. But for whatever reason, Isaac disapproved of the marriage. Joseph continued to importune Emma, and he asked her again and again, didn't necessarily ask her father a second time. That's another tradition that's kind of developed, that he continued to ask her father, but the sources suggest he only asked her father once. He said no, but that Emma, as she went up to visit Josiah Stoll at some point, probably because her sister lived not far from him, and she was probably visiting her sister, or at least had initially visited her sister and went to talk with Joseph. Joseph was able to convince her to marry him, and they went ahead and picked a family friend, Zachariah Tarbell, who knew the family. His brother lived not far from the hills. He performed the ceremony as the local justice of the peace. He was also a Presbyterian in Josiah Stoll's religious community.
So they eloped.
They eloped. Yes. And it wasn't unusual. As a matter of fact, a prominent Methodist minister had done exactly the same thing because he experienced similar circumstances, and he encouraged others to do the same thing. But it wasn't rare, but it was unusual that people didn't usually elope. It suggests, though, that Emma gave up what these journals of her peers were suggesting, that what they looked for was an elaborate wedding, you know, a nice wedding cake with sugar plums on the cake and bridesmaids. And some of them even practiced being bridesmaids for weddings. And it was a nice ceremony, usually in the home of the bride. But Emma gave all of that up to marry Joseph. She gave up even more. As a matter of fact, she's the first individual in the church who really had to make those sacrifices of giving up her family, her relatives, a nice home. She says that she left with essentially just the clothing on her back. And as they eloped and they went up to live with Joseph's parents for a time, she wrote a letter back, not even knowing when she wrote to her father if he would allow her to get her cattle and her furniture and her other things. He allowed them to come down and get those, and so they made arrangements to travel down and pick up some of her goods. But she had fully expected leaving it all behind as well. When they went down to pick up their goods, her father was able to convince them to come down and live with the family as well, just like her siblings, all right close to the family and in close circumstances as he had apparently wanted. And so that arrangement finally worked out to where they were able to go back.
You're listening to Legacy on the Mormon Channel, and we're talking with Mark Staker today about the early life of Emma Hale Smith. You mentioned David Hale's daybook record, and what do some of the entries in that book tell us about the day-to-day life of Joseph and Emma?
Well, that is helpful to get a picture of their early experiences just as they move back to Harmony. Joseph at that time has a third full of beans. That's enough beans to keep him going for a few weeks, maybe a month. But beans get tiring pretty quick. They needed other resources as well. And the day book suggests that Joseph made a little bit of money, first by making leather mittens for others, and also that he made money by digging wells for some of his neighbors. What is interesting about that is it helps put Joseph's experiences in translating the Book of Mormon into a historical context. We've known, because some of some individuals mentioned that when they lost 116 pages of the Book of Mormon manuscript, that Moroni came and took the plates back, and the interpreters, the Urim and Thummim. And so Joseph went for a period of time without those things. And during that period, he worked digging wells, trying to make money. And interestingly, right as September of 1828 approaches, he seems to be preparing for something. He's in the middle of a well job, and he quits that job before it's finished, and somebody else finishes that job on, if I remember the exact date, it's the 17th of September that he does that. And then he goes out and buys these supplies. He had earlier sold some supplies that he had. He sold a shovel and he sold a penknife that you'd need to write with. But he's now buying some food and some other things, apparently preparing for a period of time when he won't be working and bringing money in for his family. And that happens just as Moroni, according to historical records, returns the plates to him to begin translating again. And so the day book puts that into context and suggests that this happened as he remembered it happening.
Excellent. We know that Emma acted as scribe during the translation for a time. What other influences did Emma have on the Book of Mormon?
Emma actually played a much bigger role than we typically give her credit for. When Joseph talks about translating, he mentions Martin Harris, he mentions Oliver Cowdery. He seems to think of Emma as kind of part of himself, which she was. They were a team and worked together, and so he doesn't mention Emma. But others do, and to give her credit for playing an early role in translating the Book of Mormon, she worked as Joseph's first scribe. And during this period, Joseph continues to ask questions. For example, were there walls around Jerusalem? Because he didn't realize that there were. He didn't have that historical context that Emma had, having attended apparently a female seminary. And so she instructed him and said, yes, there were. She taught him how to pronounce words, even the name Sarah. That he didn't know how to pronounce that. He was so uneducated at the time that he would spell out the word as he was given it somehow, and Emma would tell him how to pronounce that. She helped him in kind of his initial preparation as he was doing the beginning translation efforts. He had copied down a number of characters and had translated some of those, and this seems to be part of that process, that Emma was helping him as he struggled initially trying to do that. Her brother Reuben also helped in this very early stage, doing some of that translation. They apparently did it in the log home next to the frame home where Joseph and Emma lived initially. And Emma actually said that the golden plates were kept underneath their bed during that time period, and that they were kept on a table wrapped in a tablecloth. But she didn't look, even though they were right there readily available to her, because she was asked to not look at the record, which took incredible patience on her part, I imagine.
You've spent a lot of years with Emma, studying her and finding out about her. What can a study of Emma Hale Smith do for the average member of the church?
That's a good question. I think that Emma has gone through a lot of things that we go through. She had struggles with these revelations as they came, trying to incorporate them in her life. She had to sacrifice. She gave up her family, as I mentioned earlier. As a matter of fact, she writes a tender letter to her mother in 1840 when her nephew, Lorenzo Wasson, shows up at her house in Nauvoo. And he writes a letter back to the family and then allows Emma to write a large portion of the letter. And then Joseph adds a few things at the end. And what Emma says is, you know, it's been 10 years since I've heard from any of you. These are the names of my children. She's writing her parents. These are the grandparents of her children. Don't even know their names. I don't know their ages. And she's telling them that these are their names. These are their ages. Come out to Nauvoo. We have some property. You can live here. You can learn what we believe. They call us Mormons, she says, assuming that her mother doesn't quite know those details. But that you can learn what we believe, and if you become a Mormon, great, you know, but if you choose not to, you're welcome to be here. We'll provide a place for you. Those are some of the things that she gave up that I think we can learn from, that as we're called on to make sacrifices of a similar nature. Emma went through a lot of difficulties in her life. As a matter of fact, I have here, I can pull out a statement from her mother-in-law. Most of us don't expect our mother-in-laws to be so kind to us as Emma's mother-in-law was to her. But I think that this encapsulates some of the things that we can learn from Emma. This is Lucy Mack Smith talking about Emma, her daughter-in-law. She says, "I have never seen a woman in my life who would endure every species of fatigue and hardship from month to month and from year to year with that unflinching courage, zeal, and patience which she has ever done. For I know that which she has had to endure. She has been tossed upon the ocean of uncertainty. She has breasted the storms of persecution and buffeted the rage of men and devils, which would have borne down almost any other woman. It may be that many may yet have to encounter the same. I pray God that this may not be the case, but should it be, may they have grace given them according to their day, even as has been the case with her." So I think that Lucy found in Emma things that she could emulate and hoped that we would all emulate.
Excellent. We've been visiting with Mark Staker today about the early life of Emma Hale Smith and recent activities and findings in and around Harmony, Pennsylvania. What's next for you, Mark?
Well, we'll continue to work on this for a while. We're hoping to see some wonderful things happen out in Harmony that will help us commemorate those early years of Emma's life, and particularly the things that Joseph experienced while there, and looking forward to that happening.
Excellent. Thanks for spending some time with us, and we'll look forward to our next visit.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Nathan Wright, and you're listening to The Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We invite you to listen to new episodes of Legacy Saturdays at 1 o'clock. You can also download any Legacy episode at mormonchannel.org.